This is Sustainable Long Island. With co-producer Tony Ernst, I'm Francesca Rhiannon. A group of East Hampton residents say they're alarmed by the collapse of species that threaten our survival. In particular, they say, our lawn culture is poisoning us and insects in our yards, and thereby undermining the basic foundation of our food. Change E. Hampton is calling for habitat restoration and healthy yards. That means reimagining our landscape together with our landscapers and getting local town governments on board. I spoke this week with Gail Pellett of Change E. Hampton, New York, one of the group's organizers. Here's our conversation. Gail Pellett, welcome to Sustainable Long Island.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on your program.
Now, I should tell our listeners that I first found out about Change Hampton because you gave a presentation to the East Hampton Energy and Sustainability Committee, of which I am a member, and I was so impressed by your project, by your organizing, that I thought, got to have you on Sustainable Long Island. So start out by telling us, what is Change Hampton?
Well, Change Hampton is an organization of neighbors. It's a very grassroots organization and very fresh and new. We have been working so much on our agenda and mission and reaching out to all kinds of individuals and groups that we haven't yet even made a website. But how we got together was we were a group of neighbors that have lived for a long time in one area of East Hampton on Eastern Long Island. And like many, many, many people these days, we're very concerned and at moments panicked about climate change, about global warming, and especially about species collapse. And so we wanted to figure out in this time in which neighbors and populations and communities are often atomized and polarized, and it's not so easy to approach your neighbors with a common purpose. But since we had been old friends and neighbors, it was, you know, more organic for us to start meeting and thinking globally, but wanting to act locally with other individuals and also with the town. Now, what motivated us initially was that it was the middle of last summer or spring and summer of 2021. And we were just horrified by the level of use of leaf blowers in our neighborhood. This is something that everybody knows who lives in any suburban community has escalated in the last 5 or 10 years. And there's a reason that communities all across the country have been starting to work to regulate the use of leaf blowers is because they've become ubiquitous and they're everywhere all year round. And so we had, the normal, what is now considered the normal response to them, which is, of course, the horrifying noise levels, but also the pollution, the aerosol pollution that comes especially from the gas blowers. And at first we looked at the gas blowers and we thought, oh my God, you know, we started to look up what they did. They produced 300 times the aerosols of a 2012 Ford pickup truck. They're based on a very antiquated two-stroke engine system, and they shouldn't be in use anymore, and given our concerns with fossil fuels, et cetera. But so that was easy to sort of research and understand that part of it, the threat to human health. But then what we discovered that scientists have been telling us that leaf blowers in general, not just gas, but electric blowers as well, are disturbing, disrupting, and destroying insect habitat. Because insects in the fall begin to, and I'm talking about all kinds of insects, it includes moths and butterflies and bees, start digging into that leaf and litter layer in our yards or gardens, and they are hibernating over the winter time and regenerating there. So by blowing these things out of to smithereens, we are actually contributing to the catastrophic collapse of insect populations by the use of that technology. Now, we discovered that East Hampton had just put into effect some regulations on the use of gas blowers during the summer months and restricting them to summer months. But what we were learning in our neighborhood was there was no enforcement of those regulations. So that was our initial spur to form this organization and begin to try it. We started writing letters to the local newspaper. We happened to be fortunate in East Hampton to have a local newspaper that takes letters from everywhere. And there are times when it becomes like a Democratic town hall. And we then met with the supervisor of our town and Peter Vanskoyak, and we began to put together our sort of proposal manifesto. But what was happening while we were doing that is we were learning a lot more about the nature of our practices across the board about our landscape and particularly turf lawns. And so we began to really educate ourselves about all the things that we were doing with lawns that were really about committing suicide. I know that's strong language. You may want to interject here.
Yeah, do say more. We are committing suicide. I mean, I assume on the one hand, you're talking about what's been called the insect apocalypse, because insects are, in fact, the basis of the entire food chain. Is that not right?
You know, scientists have told us over and over again, if the human species died out tomorrow, the insects would thrive and be fine and flourish and carry on. If when they die out, we're doomed. We don't last any longer because they're vital to our food chain, our agriculture, to everything that we grow, and love for beauty and to eat. So there we have it. So we got very hepped up about all of this. I had actually written an article of sort of a major article about how our lawns are killing us. And I know that's strong language, and there are some people that might take offense to that strength. But the reality is that lawn turf lawns, whether they're in your yard or in a business or a town hall or at a school playing field or a golf course, are dead ecological zones. We have robbed habitat in order to make those lawns. We've robbed major and vital habitat. And you know that the grass that's used in lawns all over America is all imported seeds. They're all foreign grass seeds. They're from Europe and Africa and Asia, and therefore require enormous intervention to maintain. The use of fertilizers first, which, you know, create a huge nitrogen load that ends up in our groundwater and our drinking water. And then all the pesticides and fungicides that are used on lawns mixed with that water. You see, the lawns don't, and grass lawns don't retain nitrogen in any way or any pollutants because they're roots are so short and thin. The advantage of planting native plants is that their root systems go very deep and cleanse the water and soil and create resilience. So this is, you know, we began to educate ourselves about all of this, and we put together a proposal, and, you know, we presented that to the committee that you sit on, the Energy and Sustainability Committee, that advises the town, the East Hampton Town Board. And in that proposal, we talked about some things we were trying to promote, and that is to lessen, you know, reduce the size of your lawns, for one thing. That's something simple that all of us as individual homeowners and that have yards and lawns can do. And if you must have a little part that's lawn and you need that or you like that, make it clover, because clover retains nitrogen. And so it's a healthy thing to use as a lawn material. But we also talk about stop using any kind of chemicals or pesticides and fertilizers in your yard. And of course, to plant native plants and pollinating plants. And that way of building resiliency and bringing back insect and bird and butterfly habitat.
It's interesting. I just went by the Springs General Store here in East Hampton, and it's right by a beautiful little area called Pussy's Pond.
Oh, yes.
Which has been returned. It used to be a park, but now it really isn't. It's just an area that's been planted with a lot of native grasses and native plants. And I noticed that the bird song was absolutely, there was just a huge chorus of birds coming from that one area. And it was so startling. I realized that's what a healthy ecosystem sounds like.
Yes, healthy. And you know, I think the other thing, Francesca, is that we are so wedded to the lawn aesthetic. And, you know, it has its own deep history in suburban North America, coming from England, et cetera. It's been attached to order and conformity and wealth and status. In fact, if you look at how properties are presented in East Hampton, and I'm sure in other suburban communities, they often have huge lawns in the photographs. That's one of the aesthetics they're selling. And we're trying to engage people in a new kind of thinking. How do we rethink and reimagine our yards? Can we fall in love with chaos? Can we give up that ordered, short, manicured look? Can we imagine it, you know, what it is to bring those insects and butterflies and birds and birdsong back into your yard and your life? And I think, you know, there's some people who've said, well, what we did with lawns is we aestheticized death. Well, in order to change that, we have to open ourselves up to a whole other way of thinking about native plants and species and ourselves and our connection to it all.
That's beautiful. You're listening to Sustainable Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon, and I'm talking with Gail Pellett of Change Ehampton, New York. So you spoke before about pollinators, and you have a wonderful brochure in which you lay out your plan for the town of East Hampton, in which you take inspiration from other towns around the country that have promoted what are called pollinator pathways. So tell us about this municipal plan of pollinator pathways that you're trying to bring to East Hampton.
Well, you know, this is a train that has left the station around parts of the country, that communities around the country are beginning to promote what we call a pollinator pathway. And I just want to explain what that is first, and then we'll talk specifically about what we've been promoting to the town of East Hampton. A pollinator pathway, as you take all these disjointed pieces of property that may be municipal town property, county property, they may be schoolyard or a churchyard or an individual homeowner's yard, and you want to take and transform that dead ecological zone that it currently is, that has no life left in it, and bring it back to life. And you want to create pollinator plants and things so that bees and butterflies and all the pollinating insects and birds can travel this path. And the reason to make a path where there are close by pieces of pollinating garden is because certain critical bees in our life have a very short movement span. The diameter within which they move can be very tight. And so this is why this movement has begun to take off. And There are some incredible models. If any of your listeners want to look these up, one that was an action plan that was done for Great Barrington, and another for Lincoln, Massachusetts. There are more out there, but those two are really splendid. And so when we started to get excited about this as our group, Change Hampton, we presented to your committee, and we are now going to present it to the town board, the idea of launching and having the town model and initiate and be a catalyst for this movement. There's already an initiative in Suffolk County where, you know, East Hampton lies in Suffolk County, but nothing yet for our town. And we want to light that fire if we can. So then in the process of doing the presentation to your committee, right afterwards, we heard from the town natural resources department that they had decided to do a native garden, planting garden on the rather large campus of Town Hall in East Hampton. And we were thrilled to hear that. And we, when we go to propose to them next month, our proposal, we want to take another chunk of that property of Town Hall, right in front of Town Hall, to do a meadow pollinating garden mix. And with the idea that this initiates a pollinating pathway from the one segment to the other segment, which is over a roadway. And we are now reaching out to churches in our community. We've already had very enthusiastic responses from schools, and particularly the Ross School, that want to do a pollinating garden, and individuals who have supported our proposal and effort. So we're hoping to trigger the idea of a pollinating pathway.
That's so exciting. Now, give us an idea of what a pollinator, you know, what might be some plants that you might find in a pollinator pathway? And is this something that individual homeowners can also join and do?
Yes, of course. And this is what we're in the process of putting together, our Change Hampton. We're very busy. We realize, you know, there's a lot of resources out there. There are organizations that have put together, you know, ways, even organizations that if you go online and look at them, you can get a pollinating seed packet, but, you know, starting package. But they're all over the place, and we're trying to winnow it down so that we can create some toolkits for individual homeowners, for maybe church groups, et cetera, and schools, that for people who live in slightly different ecozones, even within the confines of East Hampton town, we have people who live closer to the ocean, closer to a wetland, and we need to have slightly different approaches. I'm not an expert on all the names of all the plants, but I'm going to be one soon. We've actually put together a great team to do this project. If we get permission from the town to go ahead, we are engaging with a very renowned landscape designer, Abby Lawless. And of course, we've had a lot of advice and consultation from Edwina Van Gaal, who's well known in our community as somebody who does native plant landscaping design. And in fact, she has offered to do a workshop for the people that are part of members of our Change Hampton individual property owners. And that's also what we do want to focus on, is having some individuals who have pretty large lawns in East Hampton, to have them as examples, because the potential for education and outreach and publicity is enormous with this project. And that's what we're focusing on. Also, the idea with the proposal that we're making to East Hampton Town about this native plant pollinating garden right in front of Town Hall to be part of a pollinating pathway, is that we're trying to engage a lot of different diverse members of the community in this project, so that there's a community buy-in and an ownership of this project. And we think that's the only way we're going to really start changing that mindset and thinking and imagination about lawns. But it takes, I think, a leap for some people to think, you know, I want that all looking neat and tidy, shaved down to a, you know, an inch and not a leaf around. We're actually trying to get people to love leaves. That's one of our little slogans on our proposal.
You know, for those homeowners who say, but, you know, I don't want to have the mess of leaves and I don't want to have ticks because, of course, ticks do hide in leaves. Talk about the scheduling of leaf blowing when you do leaf blowing in order to preserve insect life.
Yes, that's really important because if we cannot ban blowers outright today or tomorrow, we have to start looking at when they should never be used. And that is from the beginning, from the fall, when the leaves start coming down and the temperatures start cooling, insects are starting to move into that leaf layer and into the earth right below it, because it's very protected by that leaf layer. And so you have insects, as I said before, moths, butterflies, bees, using that to hibernate and regenerate. So there's a time, there should be no, actually the scientists, I'll say, there should be no leaf blowing in the fall. Let that leaf layer accumulate, let the insects have their world to regenerate. And then in the spring, after it has been 50 degrees, say, for 5 days, and we never know quite when that is, but after the earth has begun to warm and you've had a consistent warming temperature, the insects will all have come out and gone off into their lovely worlds, and then to clean up those leaves. But, you know, people like Edwina talk about keep everything that you do in your yard on your property. In other words, you're not blowing all the leaves or even raking them and all your cuttings and trimmings and packing them off to the dump or something. She insists that what we need to do is turn all those leaves and cuttings and trimmings into mulch and earth that we can then put back into our yards and our gardens. So this takes an enormous mind change and imagination and commitment from people, and it's not going to be easy. We know that, and that's why we've focused on having the town really trying to model that behavior so that it gets more publicity and it can be more of an education and focal point for education.
Yes, that's wonderful. But just to finish the leaf thing, what you're proposing is really something that would take care of the issue of ticks. If people want to rake when it's warm, well, they're not going to, you know, most people don't really go out and use their garden all that much in the winter. And ticks are not that much of a problem in the winter. But when they are a problem, well, the ground is warm, then the insects have already flown away. So that people really could, you know, either rake or use an electric blower after the insects have gone, and they
That's
can
right.
still protect
That's
themselves.
Right. That's what the scientists are telling us that is really critical. So there's a little window in that spring after that there's been a consistent period of warmth of 50 degrees, they say, for 5 days, that you can begin to clean up that garden. And we promote raking. You know, it's an aerobic exercise. You know, the woman that we are engaging with to design this pollinating garden and meadow in front of Town Hall told us a really interesting story. She grew up on a farm in New Hampshire. Her father used to take a day to rake up their large yard around the large farmhouse, etc. Well, the leaf blowers also take a whole day now to do that same task. So in terms of the argument from landscapers, the reimagination has to come first, I think, from the homeowners and the property owners to instruct what they want from landscapers. Landscapers only do what they want. But there will be resistance, you know, because once somebody falls in love with a tool, it's really hard to take it away from them.
Well, this has just been great. Change Hampton, how do people get in touch with you if they want to?
Well, we have an email, which is changehamptonnewyork@gmail.com.
And we will post that to our website. It's changehamptonny, I believe.
Yes, NY.
@gmail.com. And is it Change Hampton or is it Change E Hampton?
It is Change E Hampton. Thanks. I use an automatic logo for this all the time, so I don't often spell it out by voice.
Well, Gail Pellett, this has just been terrific. This is so exciting, really exciting initiative. Listeners can also Google Pollinator Pathways and certainly get in touch with you if they want more information. Best of luck with this. I really, really hope that this goes forward.
Well, thank you so much, Francesca. I think, you know, you have a quote. I think in the end, we have to come back to the big picture. You have a quote on your emails that is from Rachel Carson. Can you repeat it?
And here it is. But man is a part of nature, and his war against nature is inevitably a war against himself. Yes, and I also love the other one I have on there. One of the others is by Wendell Berry, Be Joyful, Though You Have Considered All the Facts.
I love that too. Thanks so much, Francesca, for what you're doing with this program.
Well, thanks right back to you. This is Sustainable Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. We just heard my conversation with Gail Pellett of Change E Hampton, New York. The group can be reached at changehamptonny@gmail.com. Additional links to the group's work will be posted at sustainablelongisland.blogspot.com. Sustainable Long Island is heard on the third Wednesday each month at this time, and also on the second Saturday each month at 9 a.m. Programs are archived at www.sustainablelongisland.blogspot.com. Sustainable Long Island is produced by Tony Ernst and yours truly, Francesca Rhiannon.